Hello, and welcome to our live webinar, HTML5, the Code to Maximizing Revenue, sponsored today by SPI Global and powered by Book Business Magazine. I'm Matt Steinmetz, publisher of Book Business, and I'm pleased to welcome you to today's event. If you have any technical difficulties during today's webinar, you can troubleshoot by clicking on the Help widget. You can also use the Q&A box. Please make sure that you have all pop-up blockers on your computer turned off, so you're able to utilize all the widgets and the bells and whistles on the console. Lastly, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all these widgets on the console can do for you and can help customize your experience today. Here today to discuss maximizing your revenue with HTML5 is John Wheeler, Senior Vice President, Strategy and Emerging Technologies of SPI Global. John is an industry veteran with more than 20 years' experience in publishing and expertise in the development and deployment of e-publishing, e-learning, and multimedia solutions. He currently works closely with SPI Global's operations team in developing technology-enabled solutions that offer higher-value services and position the company as a strategic partner to its clients. Prior to joining SPI Global, John was with Elsevier for more than 6 years as Director of Multimedia Production, where he was responsible for the production of all electronic products supporting Elsevier's global publications. So again, thank you all for being here, and without further ado, I'd like to welcome John and turn the presentation over to him.
Okay, hello. Welcome, everyone. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Wheeler. I'm Senior Vice President of Strategy and Emerging Technologies for SPI Global, and people ask me all the time, well, you know, what does that mouthful of a title mean? And I always tell them that it means I've got one of the better jobs in this industry, and that I get to meet with our customers, I get to keep track of technologies, I get to make sure that we're on the cutting edge of all the things that are important to our customers as we move forward into what's really become a new digital age in the publishing business. Today I'm going to talk a bit about HTML5 and how it is affecting the business. First of all, I'll just take a minute and talk about SPI Global, give you guys the commercial first. We're a organization that seeks to empower publishers and all kinds of content providers and help them maximize the value of their content by using technology, know-how, and innovation in the business. We think we provide our clients with a competitive advantage in creating unique strategies, redefining some of their business models, enhancing, developing new service offerings, and certainly by increasing operational efficiencies in their work. We have a complete suite of digital publishing, content enrichment, marketing, customer support services, and we strive to make sure that customers are able to adapt to the rapidly changing demands of the marketplace. I'd like to start with a quote that I use quite often that comes from a gent that was a former president and CEO of John Wiley. And if any of you are in the publishing business, you certainly understand this, that in the past 5 years, there's been more business models available to a publisher than in the previous 193 years. And I suspect that it's more than the 193 years. I think it goes way back to the beginning of publishing, in that they're no longer limited to the physicality of a book or a journal. There's all kinds of ways now to distribute your content other than by paper. What this leads to is a lot of questions that we find in the marketplace. People are wondering about the dominance of e-books. I mean, since I've been in this business, paper's been on the way out, but of course it hasn't gone yet, and I doubt that it's going to go quietly ever. But we're seeing a great dominance of e-books. There's billions upon billions of mobile devices available. There's all kinds of standards, one of which, of course, is the HTML5 we'll be talking about. There's all kinds of business models that are very complex that stretch all the way across an organization. It's not just editorial or the operations groups that have responsibilities there anymore. Tablets are growing and taking off. And the bottom line of that is it seems like most of the executives that I've dealt with feel that there is a significant amount of organizational change, whether it's retraining, whether it's restructuring, whatever it is in their organization, in order to take advantage of what we're seeing in this new world of the digital marketplace. Another quote that we like to use is that when you look at what we call the content continuum, okay, it probably exists as the largest opportunity that most people have seen in book publishing. Once again, as we move away just from physicality of books and talk about digital content, talk about mobile, talk about all the other ways that content can be distributed just in time, all of this represents some huge opportunities. And we're actually working on a number of opportunities with publishers that didn't even exist as little as 2 years ago as far as a profit-making opportunity within a publisher. So if you look at our kind of historical slide here, you know, we go back to Gutenberg, and it was revolutionary that movable type could present and print out items in semi-mass quantities. Then we had automated presses, and then we had the high-speed presses. Moving from the high-speed presses, we started talking about digital distribution. At first, it was just text on a screen, but, of course, that's moved now to all kinds of browser receiving content, as well as mobile devices, tablets, smartphones, you name it. If you just look historically at you know, how did we get here today as far as HTML5 as a way to distribute content, way back when, in 1981, when a gent named Tim Berners-Lee cooked up the World Wide Web, he came up with a way to mark up text so that the then very nascent browsers could understand the text, understand the things such as bold, understand things such as spacing, understand italics, understand all the things necessary to give text some life on screen. And it was fairly rudimentary, but it worked well. And any of us who've got enough history in this business and who've programmed in HTML or written HTML at all, you know, understands this markup. And it's interesting to note that about the same time, a little small company called Adobe came up with a system that they thought might be useful in helping organizations share documents as far as what the print fidelity was, a portable document format that they could use to share documents across organizations that maybe didn't have the same application that developed it. And then later on, looking to leverage Shockwave, Macromedia purchased a program that was then known as Futures Flash Animator. They shortened that name to Flash, and Flash became a key component in delivering rich content over the Internet. Before we go any further, I think I've got a poll question that we'd like to ask the group just to see where the group is organizationally in using HTML5. So, you know, it's asking, well, are you already migrated? And, of course, that's a very open-ended question. I know everyone's, even if you think you've migrated, you haven't migrated all of your content. But I guess the question here is, you know, in your organization, is there a commitment to migrate, you know, some at least some of your content delivery to HTML5? We'll give everybody a few minutes to answer, and there we go. I'm actually surprised at the number that has not migrated yet. That's very interesting. Okay, so a follow-on for that is, are you considering migrating? And if you are, when? And once again, we know it's not everything that you've got that you would migrate to HTML5 as far as a delivery mechanism, but just what is it that you are thinking of migrating, and then when? And that's a considerable not sure. So hopefully some of the things we talk about in this webinar will help these people decide, answer some of the questions they might have, and take a little bit of the fog out. And finally, one last thing. If you're considering migration, you know, just how are you going to go about doing it? Are you going to ramp up internally with an internal team? Do you have somebody in place? Or do you consider a partner being a necessary part of this? And here are the results. And, boy, it's not much different than we anticipated. Most people we find that have an internal team actually do use a partner, and most of the people we talk to are not sure what the plan is. So that's pretty pretty interesting. And once again, hopefully the rest of this seminar will help you guys understand how this is moving along. Okay, well, moving forward, when we talk about what we're going to do with HTML5, or why you would use it. The thing that we see the most that organizations are most interested in using is, you know, some sort of enhancement. We use a title slide here of enhanced ebooks, but basically it's an enhancement of the content. In other words, how do you, how will you be able to take advantage of the delivery platform where the content is being delivered? And you know, things like audio and video, various animations, interactivities, are all being seen as key to the future of books. And especially when we look in the science, technical, medical, the educational markets, whether it's K-12 or through higher ed or even graduate work, we're seeing a lot of work with media components. And we're seeing a lot of media components being introduced and supported by our journal publishers as well. So, we're seeing that this is very important. And moving forward, there's some very good tools in development, whether you use InDesign or Creative Suite. Apple has their iBooks author, very capable tools for working on that. But you see that it's not as easy as 1, 2, 3, as some people would have you make it make you believe. So if we step back and say, wow, when all there was some sort of screen, some sort of Windows screen or some sort of monitor, whether it's the old analog monitor you see there, or you see the digital monitors, or you see the gentleman at the bottom there is operating his Windows screens manually, it was pretty easy to choose your output because you were pretty well limited to, not so much limited, but you pretty much understood and knew what was on the other end of that delivery chain. But when we added all of the various mobile devices, whether we have an Android device, whether you have an iPad of either size, whether you have the Kindle Fires, whether you have a smartphone, if you have all the various mobile outputs that people are looking at, certainly complicated how we had to go about delivering content and creating content to be delivered across these platforms. And what we found is that no longer is it simply just converting at the end of a process, but the manufacturing of content needs to consider mobile outputs as part of the production workflow. So not only do we have our mobile devices, we have the various competing formats on these mobile devices. So do you need your content to be reflowable? Do you look for page fidelity? Do you look for a fixed layout? Which of the devices are you targeting? You know, all of these things have a lot to do with how you approach, the manufacturing of your content and whether or not HTML5 is a good option for you. I talked a little bit earlier about the fact that most people are looking to leverage the delivery device, whether it's a computer, whether it's a handheld, whether it's a smartphone, whether it's a tablet, you name it, or whether it's something we don't even know that exists yet. And in leveraging those delivery devices, people are looking to include things like I have listed here, animations, video, audio, quizzes, interactive exercises. You know, all of those items need to be considered as part of the manufacturing of the content. And what just tends to happen sometimes is people forget that all of this media content that you like can sometimes sit separate from the text content, and it all arrives with its own production cycles. It has its own programming needs. It has its own QA requirements, and it actually has its own applicability to various specific devices, players, or where you're going to target the content. And one of the questions that we find all the time within organizations is making sure that they have a clear path of ownership of the production, of the integration, of the QA, of how do they degrade content if it goes to a limited device. You know, this is something that now needs to be considered as people are developing content. So, yes, where does HTML5 come in all this? Well, one of the ways that the question was answered before to the previous slide of ownership and embedding content was Flash. And Flash was probably the most widespread add-in there is on the browsers, on the desktop marketplace. I'm sure it's over 95% of all PCs have it. Most of the web users and most of the internet desktop users have Flash Player installed. I know I get a nag screen every day of my new flash is ready. Do I want to install it and download it? But what happened in a couple of years ago, 2010, 2011, were a number of things that told there's going to be a change in how rich internet applications were going to be delivered, and it had some bad news for flash. And the first was the iPad. And I like to say that it's very unusual that I guess the first blow in a fight turns out to be a knockout blow years later. But I think Steve Jobs, the late Steve Jobs, point has been proven that I think that no one understood the importance of this device and how it was going to help drive some of the thought processes about how content is going to be created for the new mobile devices as time goes on. I know that if I was a betting person, I would have betted a bit, I think, on Flash. I thought that Apple would have relented and let Flash onto the iPads, but obviously that hasn't happened, and it certainly helped to drive some of the rest of this conversation. Another thing that's happened that's become extremely important to publishers or the publishers we deal with is EPUB, the various flavors of EPUB, and what the IDPF is doing there. And it's very interesting that EPUB is pretty much XML wrapped in HTML5. This big block of text on the side, I don't expect anybody to read all that right now, but it just comes from the IDPF's website that talks about how they are using HTML5 as part of EPUB 3. And understanding that there's some confusion around that space, the IDPF has even introduced their own open source reader to let people work with that called Readium. And if any of you are not part of the IDPF or have not visited their website, I suggest they do because there's a ton of good materials there that will help you make some heads or tails of both EPUB and how HTML5 relates to EPUB. So if we look at HTML5 in particular, and talk about what are the various business reasons. I've listed five here. There's probably a ton more. But if you look from the perspective of the publisher, here are some things that we see are really being important in driving HTML5, both for the manufacturing and the distribution of content. One is the multi-platform support. We found that done correctly, HTML5 pretty much will render well on any of the devices or applications that support it. So that means that the content can resize. You don't have to worry about your screen dimensions. You don't have to worry about which way the device is oriented. You can leverage the power of the cascading style sheets to understand where the content's being displayed and to actually help make sure that the content is able to be displayed pretty much without a lot of handwork on various different devices. You can update your content. You have better control over your content than if it's buried into an EPUB or if it's embedded in an app. The content is delivered through the web, and so you can change it on the fly as necessary to make sure that you're able to push out updates and the newest content. As HTML5, there's very few restrictions. People complain about Apple's iTunes policies or guidelines, the various costs, can create their own content displayed very well without having to worry about the iTunes delivery model. Same on pricing and subscriptions. By going around the app stores, publishers can control their pricing and they can cut out the middlemen, and that means it can be Apple, it can be Google, it can be anyone that is trying to get a piece of the publisher's pie is able now to distribute content without going through those areas. And then, of course, very good mobile distribution, like I said in the first part. Almost every mobile device, every tablet, every e-reader with a browser supports enough in HTML5 that we're able to display the majority of the content we've been asked to display without any real issues. And it's been very important for our publishers to be able to embrace and use that. Besides the business driver, there's a lot of technology impacts. And some are obvious and some are not. And the first quote there comes from the New York Times, where they say that they're hearing from engineers that HTML5 technology will make it possible to write applications accessed through a browser that are as rich and lively as native apps. And I've seen quite a few that are getting there. I haven't seen any that are the best there is, but I've seen quite a few that are pretty much getting to the point of native apps. And by using the HTML5 modes, you can build these with less code. You can develop a common code base that works for both your web and your mobile environments. So that reduces the amount of code developers need to maintain, how they need to write in the first place, and decreases the chance of errors. Another item that we've seen that we see actually at SVI is the last one there, which is basically retention. Being able to work in HTML5 or being able to work in the latest and greatest of the products has helped us maintain some of the good talent that we have and develop new talent moving up through the organization. So it's very good that the engineers within an organization are able to use HTML5. The second one there, just to go out of order for once, it's very interesting that the SEO, or the search engine optimization, or the discoverability of your content, or whatever you want to call it, is better with HTML5 because the content you have, the links that it makes, the information contained therein, isn't locked away in an app like it is if it's a native thing. So it's discoverable by search engines. And, of course, most people feel that HTML5 is the wave of the future, and that by utilizing HTML5 or building with HTML5 in mind, we're able to help individuals and publishers come up with ways that their content will be usable moving forward. Okay? And publishers looking at that, you see the results there. 31% of the respondents, said they're using it as a rich media format compared to 25.4%. And this is going to continue to grow, and we're going to see more and more of the Flash move down as the publishers move up into the HTML5. And what this allows them to do is address the widest variety of devices and not worry about what channels they have to use. If you're using just a native app or if you're using Flash, you have to pay very close attention to what channel you're going through. But the content manufacturing workflow for HTML5 allows you to make some of these changes and decisions on the fly and kind of gives you the first real step, I think, since I've been in the publishing business, of being able to maybe author this once and publish anywhere. And frankly, we think that the only question for publishers is that ask me whether or not they should be embracing HTML5 is they can prepare now or they can play catch-up later as this takes off. To make it easy for publishers that are working with HTML5, Adobe itself, you'd think that maybe they would be worried about the loss of Flash as a revenue source, but remember, Adobe is a tool organization. They don't make money off Flash. They make money off the tools used to create Flash, and they have some very good tools now. Starting with Adobe Edge Animator, Creative Suite 6, are all very good and super good packages. Even Dreamweaver for those of us that still use those packages. And the text box there kind of talks about is actually from Adobe's website when they were making some responses to what people saw as the demise of Flash, and that Flash was going to go away, and what were they going to do about HTML5. And what they've done, of course, is they've embraced their expertise, which is tool sets and building tools for programmers to use to create content around HTML5, not just Flash. Besides people like Adobe, I talked about Readium from the IDPF. If you're in the business of making interactive learning, you probably know of a program called Lector or Articulate, both of which are very good for interactive learning and interactive packages. One of the the questions we're asked, though, in talking to our publisher and our publisher partners is that, you know, what can they do with the legacy content that they might already own? And in this case, as I mentioned before, you know, there's lots of good tools available to create new content in HTML5, but we've got a lot of organizations who have literally thousands of interactive exercises. They have quizzes, they have animations, they have media components, they have all kinds of things in Flash that they now need to leverage for distribution across platforms that don't support Flash. And it's rather interesting that, you know, I say this represents a huge investment in content authoring, programming, and support, and that's true. I mean, but it's not just the money that was spent on creating this content. I mean, all the hard work has been done. I mean, they went through some instructional design. They went through everything necessary to come up with good content and good, good practices to make content in Flash. And they were fully expecting to support some of these products for years to come with this Flash. So now do they have to reinvest, or what is it they can do to actually capture the content that they had in Flash and make it into HTML5, or not so much HTML5, but make it into something that can be delivered across the variety of platforms available. We've looked at a number of the various packages available for conversion, and you know, great out there. You see things such as Google Swift, Adobe's Wally, Adobe's Captivate Converter, things of that nature. And what we found is that most of those provide a good starting point to help you come up with an HTML5 version of your Flash. Some of them are very acceptable for simple animations and straightforward conversions. So if you just have a little animation you want to convert to HTML5, sometimes this will work for you. But in most cases, for us, they provide a starting point for the additional work necessary in order to actually make your content into HTML5. And when it comes to converting the legacy content, we say it really takes some effort. We see that we have to take a very disciplined approach to extracting all the graphics, to mapping hotspots. Depending on the version of Flash done, how do we recreate the various activities used? So when we do it, we follow the seven-step practice, the seven steps you see right there. We basically take a look at the content type, what the interactivity was. Was there any data communication with the with a server? What kind of submedia, like audio and animations, might happen, and build a map of all of those types, those content types, within the application. We have to redefine the graphic elements. Sometimes we can extract them, sometimes we can capture them, but we have to redo the graphic elements to be used in the HTML5 application. If there's audio, if there's video, maybe it has to be recaptured if we can't convert it. We have to plot all the various coordinates for hotspots or target zones. So if you have a drag and a drop, or if you have a matching, if you have things of that nature, you know, all these target zones have to be done. The interactivity has to be recreated using JavaScript following the HTML5 guidelines. And then it has to be tested on the various target platforms. So it becomes quite a complicated effort as far as building a map and converting content from Flash to HTML5. If we step back from just the technology or the operational part of HTML5, what we see is the new digital world, and it's not just HTML5, but the new digital world has required a much different organizational effort than I think was seen in the past, where we have editorial, we have sales, we have marketing, we have production, you know, all need to work together. They can no longer be siloed like they were in the old book world. They have to work together, and the silos have to come down. And hopefully the silos will come down in a more organized fashion than you see in the image there. What we've seen is basically we have to put together a collaborative effort. When we're talking about electronic content, we're talking about making sure that all the parties or all of your stakeholders are fully involved and engaged throughout the process. We're finding that editorial, marketing, sales are finding themselves more involved in the technology and what can technology be done or can't be done with content, with products, with things of that nature than they ever were before. I mean, before I think the most editorial people had to understand was what a PDF was and how it worked on a printing press. Now, they too have to be drugged some part into this HTML5, into this Flash, into this XML, into all these alphabet soup of technologies that are helping drive the digital revolution in publishing. And what we've seen is all of these groups have to work together, because if you leave this strictly to production, or if you leave it strictly to your operational group, or if you leave it strictly to your IT group, it's pretty much a recipe for disaster. And what you think you get is not what you're going to get, or what you need for your customers is not what you're going to be receiving. So remember, it's going to take a collaborative effort across all of the organization to make sure that the needs of the customer are understood, the technologies that are going to deliver it are understood, and that the content is manufactured in such a way that the technologies can be leveraged to deliver it to your customers. At SBI Global, I look after a part of the organization we call the Innovation Lab, and the Innovation Lab is actually where we like to grab hold of these very, very tough questions, tough issues. It's a cross-functional team that is people within our marketing, our technology, our product research and development units. And we say it serves as a breeding ground, and what I tell everybody, it's kind of a low-risk place to take your hardest problems and see if they can be solved. And we're doing a lot of work around HTML5. We're doing a lot of work around content in HTML5. We're doing a lot of work around converting content from wherever it is now into HTML5, and have built quite a practice about that. So I think that's it for me. I hope this has been somewhat helpful for everybody. I think we have some questions and answers available. Well, we have questions already. Hopefully I have some answers. So Matt, what do you got?
Thanks, John. We appreciate your time. It was very informative. You're right. We do have questions. I would urge folks to submit more questions if they have them. We've got some time now. A number of questions have come in, John, about whether HTML5 really enables you to just skip XML. Can you touch on that?
Oh. Well, absolutely not. I'd say that creating well-marked up, well-defined, well-described content as far as what you do with XML is the first step in making sure that you create a good HTML5 application. So if you were to think about, back in the day, let's say a Microsoft Word document was the raw content that was made, sent to a typesetter to be made into a typeset document, I'd say that to anyone that is thinking about doing work with HTML5 or manufacturing content that will be delivered, via HTML5 or an HTML5 device, needs to think about XML now as being kind of the basis for the content. So no, you can't skip XML. I mean, no matter what, you'll end up with some portion of XML. You'll need some kind of XML in order for this to work.
Right.
It's what gives you the semantic. Okay. So.
So toward the end of the presentation, you talked about leveraging HTML5 really being an organizational effort across the company. If you have an organization looking to hire individuals to bring in internally to handle their HTML5 efforts or really partner with a third party, what sort of skills and expertise should they be looking for in these folks?
Well, that's an interesting question. Here's how I'm going to answer the question. I'm going to answer it in an organizational fashion about if you're talking about your editorial groups, or if you're talking about your book production groups, or your content production groups, or you're talking about your technology groups. I'd say with editorial people, with marketing people, things like that, you need to find people who have at least some level of knowledge and familiarity with producing the content in HTML5. Okay, they don't have to be programmers. They don't have to understand how to produce it themselves, but they have to understand what's necessary in order to do that, as well as what can be done. When you talk about the technology side, then you need somebody with all the skills. They need to have some very good markup skills. They need to understand XML. They need to understand HTML in all of its incantations, and need to be pretty much on top of their game as far as the technology around HTML5 is concerned. And it's kind of an interesting place to find yourself as a technologist, because all of this is still moving on and changing quite rapidly.
John, a few people are asking if there are recommended browsers and/or devices to be used to test HTML5 content?
Yeah, when we look at the various browsers that can be used to test HTML5 and the various devices, let's start with the obvious. If you have a target market that you suspect has certain things, then of course that's where you need to go. So if you're building something that you think is targeted towards iPad delivery on utilizing HTML5, then that's obviously where you need to work. But if you're just to look at things in general and say, okay, what are the various general packages, what are the general browsers, what are the general items that should be used? If you were to come to the Innovation Lab, you'd see that we have all kinds of versions of Safari running as browsers, all versions of Chrome, Firefox. We run those on all the various platforms that support them as far as the PC is concerned. If you look at tablets, we have, of course, all the various Kindles. Whether or not that supports HTML5 or not is out of the question, but we have them there. We, of course, have iPads, the old ones, the new ones, the big ones, the small ones. We have the Galaxy tablets from Samsung, and, of course, all of the new Google devices. And then on top of that, it's the various phones necessary if you think that you're going to have content that will be delivered to a mobile phone. So, all of the obvious ones, all the Android phones, all the ones that have a browser that would allow you to view HTML5.
And then for publishers, how do publishers estimate the cost of Flash to HTML conversion? Any basic guidelines?
That's a tough question because it runs from almost free if you use some of these third-party conversion applications to fairly expensive if you've got a course that needs to be converted, and the course might have all kinds of screens and it may have all kinds of interactivities built in, and we basically handle those on a case-by-case basis. I'd say as little as a few cents per conversion to a few dollars. And I'm sorry it's such a big range, but it has to do with the complexity of what that conversion is going to be.
Okay. And then what about time frames required to create HTML5 content compared to traditional content?
Well, we seem to be about exactly the same. I mean, when you say traditional content, if you're talking about going to print, of course there's a few steps as far as that are added on, but also there's a few steps left out. And we've actually found a number of publishers that are able to publish content electronically via HTML5 before the print is actually ready. So it's almost like you arrive at an HTML5 deliverable in the proper workflow before you would arrive at a content workflow, before you would arrive at a printable content workflow.
Here's another one. What are the best steps for a publisher to begin this process if they're not that familiar with XML?
I guess we have to suppose the process is what, to create HTML5 or maybe, to create XML. Well, I'll just answer this if it's to create HTML5. If you're a publisher and you're not familiar with it at all, then this is going to sound somewhat self-serving, but I'm going to say you need to find somebody as a partner that does understand this and who's done it before. And whether it's SVI or whether it's any one of the other capable organizations that are in our business with us, I'd say that's your good starting point. Maybe you should hire a consultant. Maybe you should, depending on your needs, if you're looking forward and think that you're going to have some serious in-house talent, maybe you start building that team. But I would start with, if you have no idea of what you're doing, I'd start with somebody that does, by partnering up with somebody that does, to maybe at least get you on the path correctly.
So for anyone not that familiar with you folks, can you tell us a little bit more about SPI Global, how long you guys have been in business, how many employees you have, how many technical support people you have?
Oh, okay. SPI has been in the business of content manufacturing, content conversion, for 32 years. Actually, we're one of the oldest organizations in this, I guess, KPO/BPO space for publishing. Globally, we have about 19,000 people. We're headquartered in the Philippines. As far as technology is concerned, we have over 200 technologists that support just the content solutions group of the organization. So when I talk about the innovation lab and being able to bring some technology to bear on problems, there's 200 people that we have internally that help us build these applications to work on new technologies and to actually augment and improve old technologies.
Okay, here's another one. You mentioned how marketing, editorial, and production working together are working together even more. Can you clarify what production's role will be in this digital workflow?
It's interesting. From what we've seen, production's role really hasn't changed. They still are the people that maybe are working with the acquisition of content, whether it's been written by somebody, but whether you're going to publish it as a book or publish it online or you're going to publish it as an HTML5 deliverable or wrap it up as an app, things have to happen to that content. It has to be proofread, it has to be copy edited, it has to have all the things done to it that would have been done already if it were a printed product. Where some of the complications come in and what will change the world of production is that they have to become more and more familiar with the various media that can be used as part of the content. It's no longer just the printed page, but now we can use not just a photograph and maybe a video, maybe not just a static graph, but a movable graph. The production people are going to have to become a bit more attuned to the what can be done with media. And, of course, what can be done with media through HTML5 is pretty complete. So production is going to have to change they're going to have to increase, I guess, their bandwidth and their level of expertise. It's going to be everything they've already done in the past, that helped get content ready to go, plus understanding media, and then plus understanding a bit of what can be done with the HTML5 deliverable. Likewise, the sales and marketing people have to understand a bit of what production has to do and go through so that they're not asking for things that really can't be delivered.
Sure. Does SPI host, produce, and fulfill ebook content for publishers?
I guess we're talking about distribution. So the answer to that is yes. We can handle everything that they would need from the content manufacturing portion, everything I mentioned we have our hand in, whether it's copy editing, whether it's proofreading, whether it's typesetting, whether it's the layout design of content, through the production of the final content, whether it's going to be distributed as a book, sent to a printer as a PDF. But we also are in the distribution end of this as well and have our own distribution platform that allows people to manage subscriptions to content, to sell content online, to give trial periods into content, to give peeks ahead of content. So, yeah. We could help anybody with the entire spectrum of all that content production as well as distribution.
Time for just a couple more here, John. I notice a lot of educational and academic publishers on this webinar, and this is really specific to them, so I'll ask it. How will HTML5 deal with the need for academics to create citations for chunks of content in a document if pages are no longer fixed?
That is probably one of the stickiest questions that we're dealing with right now is how do we make citations, references, things of that nature portable through content. Portable through content as it is being manufactured. And, it goes back to my saying that, okay, as far as you need to understand XML, you need to have anchors that you build into your content. It's things like page references go away. You can't tell somebody that the citation looks at page 1 or references page 20. You have to have some sort of anchor within the content, whether it's an element in your HTML or an element in your CSS that understands what that means and how that content should be cited. But you're right, that is probably one of the stickiest things that we're working with a number of our publishers on now is making sure that all of this stays accurate and portable through the content.
I want to ask two more. This person asks, would a good strategy to convert all existing, I guess they're asking, would it be a good strategy to convert all existing HTML content back to simple text, then proceed to first use iBooks Author for launching any new iBooks or EPUB?
Once again, here comes it depends. To take your content into iBooks Author, however you want to do it, you know, means that you know, you have to look, you know, first of all, that it kind of limits your target platform. But as a methodology to go straight to, you know, the iPad platform, you know, what they just described makes sense. We found that it's not very scalable, but that is a methodology that could be used.
And then a number of people, John, are just looking for more information beyond this webinar. Any resources beyond, of course, Book Business Magazine, shameless plug, that you would point them to online or with classes?
I know a number of people who have gone from zero to pretty competent by visiting their local community college that has, you know, some sort of introduction to HTML5 or introduction to XML. You don't have to be a super geek to go to these and to learn it, but depending on your level of need, you'll find that in your various community colleges. Something I really recommend. Also, the IDPF, which I think is idpf.org, is a fabulous place to start as far as understanding EPUB3 and HTML5 and how HTML5 is used within HTML within EPUB3, and then the WWC. Group which actually oversees the World Wide Web and the implementation of HTML5 is a great organization to join and to also visit their website and understand what's there.
That's great.
And then you can always ask us, and like I said, if you're starting out, don't be shy to ask for help. I mean, there's a lot of organizations. You know, SVI is one of them. I'm sure if they read Book Business, they'll see other organizations there within that fine publication. You know, they can help them, you know, get on the right track to producing this kind of content.
Sure, sure. And bookbusinessmag.com has other webinars, events, and articles that should be able to help you folks more. Obviously, this is a very timely and important topic. We had just about 800 people sign up for this webinar today, a phenomenal turnout. So I want to thank everyone for coming out. I also want to thank John Wheeler and SPI Global for sponsoring the event. Be sure to check our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars at bookbusinessmag.com. Again, thanks for being here. Please take just a quick minute to fill out a brief feedback survey. It's going to appear on your screen next. We'd be very grateful. It'll help us decide on webinars to bring you in the future. So finally, thanks again for your time, and we hope to see you at our next event. Have a great day.
Okay, thanks everyone.